Welcome back to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. Sorry for our brief hiatus. We have work and kids, which is ridiculous nonsense to let stand in the way of a podcast, Randy.
Yeah, absolute stupidity on my part. Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, there's still an opportunity to give them up for adoption and quit your job so you can do this full time. Oh, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. It's another day in paradise down here. We got a little fall weather. It's nice. It's really nice.
That is nice. We have we have perfect fall weather at the moment, but it's about to turn not so perfect in about a week and a half. Yeah. So we're about to round that corner. Yeah, what do you get, guys? Getting highs in the 70s, low 80s type deal?
I was like in the 40s this morning. It's like 60 something outside right now.
That's nice. Awesome.
That's nice. Yeah, highs in the 70s would be good. It'll be like 95 on Friday, but you know, it was a couple of days of enjoyment at least.
Texas from October till early June. I'll take it. Ooh. Any day of the week. It's awesome. After that, a little hot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm with you.
So do you ever drive in August, like when you're driving to a job site or something, and you look and you see the high school guys, heat of the day, in pads, doing two-a-days, and you're just like, how did I do that?
Absolutely. Yes. Happens a lot. Not just football, but just people in general that are outside. You can't do that anymore. High school football around here, Paul. They got the wet bulb.
What's that?
Apparently, if you got the temperature reading and the wet bulb Fahrenheit reading is above a certain degree, no, sir, you have to go inside.
What's the wet bulb? What does that mean?
Some sort of humidity mingled with temperature. I don't know.
All right. Well, we would have never practiced.
That's what I was saying. I was like, Yoakum actually practiced. I think they did like all morning practices or are doing, or I mean, surely they're not still doing it. But like in August, they went Sarkeesian mode and practiced in the morning to avoid the deal. So supposedly it's like, you know, it was like zero tolerance too. Like if you got caught out over whatever said threshold was. No bueno. So
even small town Texas, man.
Yep.
What's happening?
Yep.
All right, man.
World's gone soft.
I don't know how much recap you want to do on the OU tragedy. If you want to do none, that would be fine. But yeah,
we can get into a little bit. I'm sure you got a couple thoughts on a couple things.
I honestly wrote down all my thoughts on Inside Texas. If y'all want to read them, jump on Inside Texas and go read them. If you haven't joined, you can join for like, I don't know, $1 for 2 months or some special. I got into it exhaustively. I'd say bottom line, I thought Pete Kwiatkowski had a poor game plan. And I thought Steve Sarkisian in game made some suboptimal decisions strategically.
Yeah, I
also OU played well, obviously.
Yeah, I think the takeaways I have, and we won't get into the weeds and plays or anything because, I mean, at this point, we're well past that. But I think OU played about as close to their ceiling as we played to our floor, if that makes sense. Give them an 8 out of 10 on performance because Gabriel left some plays on the field that made our defense look a little better than I think it actually was in the second half. And I think we played about as bad as we could, especially defensively. I don't think we play well defensively with a non-aggressive game plan.
Yep.
I understand the bend don't break or somewhat more of a passive argument. We just don't play it well. It permeates the attitude of the defense. Like they don't tackle with aggression. We don't play that defense aggressively in the way that you should. It permeates the whole thing. So I think we'd be better off just being aggressive. The only other thing is I this is kind of typical of the team that just got embarrassed last year, but we didn't match them intensity wise coming out of the gate. I think we kind of figured it out fairly quickly, but this is a game we should have won. We didn't. Nothing you can do about it now. So,
well, there is something we can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, you went out.
Went out. get another crack at him.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, we will. I think the way the Big 12 is going to fall. So there's a couple of things. One, in terms of attitude and defense and bringing it as the aggressor, that counts for a lot. And if you watch the Notre Dame USC game,
yes,
that was telling because, hey, USC defense, much maligned, deservedly so. USC defense isn't why they gave up 48 points.
Nope.
The USC offense got dominated, and Notre Dame, Al Golden, Marcus Freeman, they brought it every play. Pressure. Caleb Williams was never comfortable in the pocket.
No.
He's really gotten mechanically lax, and
that was my takeaway. He kind of went YOLO ball way too much from what I've seen from him in the past. And I mean, a couple of those interceptions, I mean, obviously you're not seeing it from his vantage point, but a lot of times in college football, you're like, I kind of see why or where he was trying to go with the ball there. I mean, a couple of those, it's like, he's seeing ghosts and was just chunking it.
Yep. Yeah. The thing is he's gotten away with that so often for so long that when the coverage tightens up, when the pressure gets more intense in his face, when he's not playing Colorado and reversing field three times and then finding a guy wide open on the scramble drill, boy, he comes down to earth. And there are a lot of NFL scouts in those stands. I don't know if fundamentally that drops him maybe to the second pick of the NFL draft instead of the first.
Right.
You got to think that's something you can correct, but I wouldn't have watched that and been like, good composure. Good check mark.
Right. Yeah. He didn't. There's some boxes he definitely left unchecked in that one, which, I mean, you get pressure in your face like that. It's rough. But I don't know. He's something about him has always just been like a little off to me to have. Yeah, I think he's a good player and a great college quarterback. Don't get me wrong. And he'll probably be fine in the pros. But for everybody just to be like, oh, he's the number one overall pick, he just doesn't have enough of the traits. There's too much Riley offense in the whole thing for me. And he'll probably be the first pick, but I don't know. He needs to show me a little bit more consistency and under duress.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. People had USC as the favorite to win the pack. I never did, but you know, this is a team that could, you know, they could finish out strong, or if you look at their schedule, it's heavily backloaded. They could very easily go 9-3, 8-4, and not meet any of those expectations. Did you watch Washington, Oregon?
I saw good chunks of it. Looked like a track meet there for a little bit. I was kind of surprised. I wasn't expecting a whole lot out of Washington on the back end. Oregon, I'm still struggling to find out or figure out what exactly Oregon's offense is, or if it's just, hey, we're going to snap the ball and block people down so Bo Nix can escape the pocket and run around. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I can count on one hand how many plays they executed where it was like, from a passing standpoint, it didn't look like a busted play or a scramble or whatever. I thought the end of first half management from Oregon was terrible. I mean, you got to kick that. Or you have to have your quarterback's got to know there's only 6 seconds on the clock. I really didn't have a problem with the other fourth down calls, but the play call was very suboptimal, to say the least. We had a roll left with a one option deal, and all you have to do to take away that is to play outside leverage on the receiver. It's not real conducive to converting that.
Yeah, I think they have a little bit of fear of Bo Nix, of opening it up. So if you'll notice, yes, a lot of their play calls passing are an immediate first read. If that's taken away, that leads to a little bit of the scramble drill you talked about.
Yep.
Bo Nix was actually super efficient in that game passing wise.
I thought he played well. It just, you don't see a whole lot of dissection and boom, there goes the ball where it's supposed to go. It's a lot more creative, which, I mean, hey, it works. Trust me. I mean, I saw it too. I mean, they put up some points. I thought when it came down to nut cutting time, their play calls kind of left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, it was funny. I wrote my little beating Vegas column, went 4-2. So rallying after a pathetic put it all on Texas versus OU.
Maserati's back in play.
Yeah, Maserati's back in play. It's a Lamborghini, though. Thank you. I'm not going to get that tacky piece of shit, the Maserati.
Wrong Italian car.
That's right.
I guess that's Italian. I don't know.
They are, definitely. I said, this is a game. I mean, and it worked out exactly like that. I was like, if you get Washington minus, so the line was 2.5, 3, 3.5 right before the game. It was veering back and forth depending on where you gamble. And it kept going back and forth, kept getting bet up, bet back down. I got Washington minus 2.5. When it went to Washington minus 3.5 or Oregon plus 3.5, I was like, bet Oregon. And people are like, oh, you know, I was like, no, no, no. It's literally that close. That is going to be the margin. The margin's 3. The question is what side you can get on it. And then I said, in game, one of these teams is going to get up double digits. It's irrelevant. They're going to reel back in the other team.
Yeah.
So you're going to have a live betting opportunity on one of these two teams. And in this case, it was Oregon. They went down 11. And at one point, you could have had Oregon plus 13 or Oregon plus, you know, 11.5. So basically, at the end of that game, you could have middled it, not only won with your Washington 2.5, which I did, but also you would have won with your Oregon bet if you had bet live in game. So, or you could have bet Oregon plus 3.5 at the beginning and still, but it was a 3-point margin. Those teams are exactly evenly matched.
Yes.
Oregon is more talented overall. Washington has better quarterback and receiver combo. And I actually think Dan Lanning's a good coach.
I agree.
But yeah. I think Kalen DeBoer, at least on offense, with a veteran quarterback, a veteran receivers, he can do some really cool stuff, right? And, you know, once he's deprived of Penix and those receivers, we'll see him start from square one with a new guy. I'm sure he'll do fine, but he's not going to be able to do quite as much. The experience that Penix and those receivers have is incredible.
Penix was, I mean, I thought he was on point. The parts of the game I saw, I mean, he's decisive, he's quick, he's got an absolute cannon. But I mean, you didn't see very many questionable decisions from him throughout that I saw, at least. I mean, maybe there was some, but yeah, I mean, I think DeBoer's got the track record to where I mean, you're losing a 6-year quarterback with two NFL receivers, probably, if not more. Yeah, it probably won't be the same next year, but I wouldn't look for him to drop off. And Lanning, I mean, I appreciate the fact that he's true to what he says he's going to do. I just think they made – I don't fault the decisions. I just think the manner in which they attacked the play calls was an issue.
Yeah, so here's
It was a single read. You know, I mean, you can't – trust your quarterback more, which, to your point, there's enough reason to fear Bo Nix to where I can understand why that would be the case.
Yeah. Here's the conundrum for analytics focused people. More coaches should be going forward on fourth down. And if your dominant unit is the offense, by all means, try to keep the ball in your offense's hands.
Yes.
However, contingent on that, just like on goal line, just like you got to have a couple of 2-point plays that you really feel good about, you need to have a couple of plays in your grab bag for critical fourth down. We're at midfield. Let's win the game. It can't be, let's roll them left and throw them to the tight end in the flat. Yep. You know, maybe they'll lose them. It's like they're pretty focused in at that point. They know it's the ball game. So, yeah, I have no problem with Dan Lanning's decision. And I think from a big picture standpoint, I just would have liked to have seen a little better play call. And
yep, I agree.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Hey, did you watch any of the Big 12 teams?
A little bit here and there. No major takeaways. I mean, Mike Gundy doing Mike Gundy things.
He's a good coach, man.
He picked a quarterback finally. And oh, my goodness, the good coach is still a good coach. It's crazy. Iowa State just completely upended what they were doing early in the year. Like, screw it. We're just going to chunk it all over the place.
Yeah.
TCU maybe 2 years in a row of picking the wrong quarterback.
Okay, we got to talk about that. So, Sonny Dykes, offensive quarterback guru, right? Sonny Dykes. He picks Chandler Morris to start for TCU last year. Chandler Morris actually plays very poorly against Colorado, of all people, in the first half, and against a really terrible Colorado team. We'll talk about Colorado here in a second. But he gets sort of injured, but it's an excuse to put in Max Duggan, and then they never look back. He's the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. And by the way, Max Duggan did have a track record. It's not like this guy was a superstar and Sonny Dykes benched him because Chandler Morris, you know, is dating his daughter or something. But it was interesting that the wrong quarterback got picked, right? Fast forward to this year, Chandler Morris is going to be the guy. He didn't play very well early in the year. He's actually started playing better. He gets hurt again. They put in Josh Hoover, the young redshirt freshman, I think. And Hoover doesn't play great in his debut, as you'd expect, playing like half the game last week or the week before. Comes out, throws for over 400 yards. Looks like he has total command of the offense. And they just beat the brakes off of BYU. What's going on with Sonny Dykes and TCU and his quarterback evals?
I don't know, man. I mean, you can't even say it's an OC thing because it's a new OC this year. It's weird. But my understanding is he's from one of the Rockwall schools. I can't remember which one. But my understanding is that he played basically in that system in high school. So he's, you know, yes, he's a freshman, but system-wise, he's probably a third-year, fourth-year guy.
Yep.
And I think that counts. See Dylan Gabriel in said system. That's very much a system to where the years that you have in it benefits you greatly.
Well, Dykes had confidence in him. So their first 21 snaps from scrimmage.
Chunking it.
17 throws. Mm-hmm. Four runs. And they're just chunking. He throws for 439 yards and four touchdowns. Now, there is something to be said about the book sort of getting established on a new quarterback. And sometimes it takes a little time for the phenom to come down to earth. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with TCU down the road.
Same story with the K-State guy. I don't know if you saw much of that K-State Missouri game, but they used him. Like, everybody's acting like, oh my God, this guy just came out of nowhere. It's like, no, when Howard got banged up,
yeah,
they used him pretty extensively in that Mizzou game, and you could tell he was talented as a runner. So it'll be interesting to see how they maneuver their way forward as well. But I feel like almost all the teams in the Big 12, like half of them have like aborted the season plan and went a completely different direction, or their quarterback got hurt and now they're getting him back at the same time.
Yeah. Well, look, that is either a sign of actually good coaching or it's a sign of panicky coaching. And I think with Kansas State, you mentioned his name's Avery Johnson, the freshman dual threat. They alternated him with Will Howard against Texas Tech and beat the brakes off Tech. Tech, they also knocked out Baron Morton. We don't know how long that's going to be. They had to put in a freshman quarterback who
he
started well, and then he threw three picks in like his next eight balls. But
he didn't have the arm strength to do what they were asking him to do yet.
No, and I don't know why they were throwing the ball. They should have been running with Taj Brooks, who seems to gain 3 yards even if he gets hit in the backfield. But Avery Johnson is the guy for Kansas State. He's a dual threat. I think from here on out, it's a quarterback rotation for Kansas State.
Yeah, I think you're going to see both of them 50-50.
One thing I like about Klieman, and you know, people talk about the consistency of Kansas State and blocking and tackling and meat and potatoes and all that. It's all true. If you don't play well at any position, he starts looking for alternatives. He doesn't have the quarterback is precious. We can't bench our quarterback because that will destroy him. He's like, Will Howard's playing bad. Will Howard's why we lost to Oklahoma State in Stillwater. Yep. Hey, man, we're putting in this other guy and we're going to see if we can get a spark. And by the way, less of Will Howard turned out to be good. because
for both of them.
Yeah, for both of them. So I think that's going to continue. Texas is going to obviously play Kansas State here in a bit, and they'll have to prepare for that. Anything about the Houston-West Virginia game? Did you see it?
So I turned it off after West Virginia scored.
Oh, God.
And I woke up the next morning, and there was a post on Twitter that said that U of H's first Big 12 win in volleyball, 17 other sports, and football was all against West Virginia. And I was like, ah, what a loser. This guy's tweet didn't age very well. And then I was like, wait, he posted that at 7 o'clock this morning. What the hell happened? Yeah. So, I bailed too early on it, but, talk about a range of emotions for old Hogo over there. He's like, I'm fired. No, I'm not.
I mean, he had tears in his eyes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he knew exactly what was going to happen, but, Donovan Smith got hot and in a rhythm, and I would think it would be very well advised for us to try to avoid letting him do that.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, they got some skill players. Their defense is not very good. But you screw around, let them hang around.
Yeah. I'm going to have an article about this on Inside Texas in a little bit. The thing about Houston is they've played three Big 12 games now. They've been blown out twice by TCU and Texas Tech. And then they beat West Virginia, who everyone was wringing their hands about, Randy, of like, what if they go undefeated? And I was like, it's more likely they lose three games than go undefeated. I'm talking about in conference play. So, look, West Virginia plays very hard. Great story.
No, absolutely. And that's what I was going to say. I was like, I mean, their quarterback's full of try. And I mean, he's a gamer and everything.
Full of try.
But that dude's not going to lead you to an undefeated Big 12 season. I'm sorry. It's just not happening.
Full of try. Hey, yeah. So someone wrote on one of our threads about the podcast, they just wrote, quote, 35-year-old to death. When you were talking about BYU, they just 35-year-old you to death sometimes.
Yeah.
So we're going to add he's full of try to the Randy lexicon. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's full of try.
I mean, he's gonna be the dude that walks. His jersey's gonna be torn. Like, it just, he doesn't have the help around him that he would need to be able to do it. I mean, they'll you're probably right. They'll probably lose another two, but I mean, it's probably gonna be good enough to save Neil Brown's job, though.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, he's the Lenny Dykstra of quarterbacking.
There you go.
And I don't mean baseball. I mean his financial trading career.
Yeah. No, I got what you're doing. Yeah. If he could play football with a huge chaw in his cheek, it would be very, very apt and fitting, especially for a guy from West Virginia.
My favorite story of Lenny Dykstra is Billy Beane. So Billy Beane was a bright guy, obviously, but he chose to take the Major League Baseball contract instead of play for Stanford. And he was a hilarious, it's hilarious that he's Moneyball, right? Because the great irony is he was this ultra physically gifted guy who wasn't very good at baseball, but they just kept him around because their light's going to turn on at some point. And it's like, well, the light never turned on, but he turned it into like a 10-year major league career, right? Yep. Well, during that career, he played with Lenny Dykstra, and who is the antithesis of Billy Beane, not physically gifted in any way, but very good at baseball, right? So they're on a bus going somewhere, and Billy Beane's reading a book, and Lenny Dykstra taps him on the shoulder and goes,
says, what's that?
And he goes, what you doing? And Billy Beane goes, just reading this book. It's about economics or whatever. And he goes, why would you do that, dude? All you're going to do is strain your eyes. It's like, yep, there's Lenny Dykstra.
Sounds about right.
Well, I know a guy who was.
I feel like if you could have put Lenny Dykstra and Ricky Henderson in a room and filmed them, that you'd have like the biggest grossing like documentary of all time.
Well, that's the other quick great story I love about Ricky Henderson is, of course, he extended his career quite late, and he was pretty damn awesome even quite late.
Yeah.
But he played in the minors. Like he got, you know, taken put down in his like late 30s, early 40s. He just still kept playing baseball because he liked baseball.
He played independent ball in the league that I played in as a freaking 20-year big leaguer. He's like, this is great. I love it.
There you go. Well, there's a great story of I think it Nomar Garcia Parra tells. I don't know who told it, but he was in the on deck circle waiting, and Ricky strikes out, and Ricky's walking back, and he hears him say, "That's all right, Ricky. You're still the best."
Yeah.
Talking to himself.
That's great.
All right. Well, I know a guy who is both an outstanding athlete and he's read a few books in his life, and we're glad. His name is David McClellan. He is a partner with Forum Financial Management, a fiduciary registered investment advisor. Not your typical advisor. He spent a lot of time with Morningstar, with Pershing. These are pretty much elite outfits in the financial world before he became a life coach and a personal finance coach, and of course, an investment advisor. If you're working with another advisor, the chances are their advice is conflicted or very narrow in scope. David works broadly and deeply with you, providing fiduciary advice wherever money touches your life. Retirement planning is David's specialty to the point where he has written white papers. Randy, have you ever written a white paper?
I've written on white paper.
I have written on white paper as well. So
sometimes it even has lines on it.
Yeah, mine has lines or else I'll go sideways. David's a little more sophisticated than us. His white paper His white papers on retirement are used by other financial advisors the country over, referencing Mr. McClellan. I would probably go with the guy that wrote the white paper, not the guy who references the white paper. So if you are in any tax deferred accounts, you may be in a rude awakening for retirement. And that's why you should read David's 9-part Kipler series on retirement tax bombs, or get it from the horse's mouth. Give him a call. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. He is a great friend of the podcast, a great friend of Longhorn Nation, and won a couple of national titles, like my buddy Randy over here. Just one.
Got me beat.
Just one. Just one lousy national title.
That's right.
In a game as easy as baseball, you should have four. There's no variance in baseball, Randy.
None whatsoever.
All right. Well, nonetheless, we love Mr. McClellan. Give him a call, find out why. And then if you're in the mortgage hunting biz at the moment, and I know some of you are, because this is actually, if you're interested in being the only bid on a house, this is a pretty good time to do it. And you can help the guy you need to call to help you with that is Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Over 20 years in the industry. He's got a law degree from a pretty high quality law school. He's been on the title side. He's been on every side of this business. And if you think getting a mortgage is as simple as getting a quote and then going and buying your house, there's a lot that can go wrong. There's a lot that can go on. Get a problem solver who understands every aspect, understands every angle. And that's Gabe Winslow. Give him a call, 832-557-1095. Tell him Paul and Randy sent you. And tell him that Maldonado is clutch when you've got three guys on base.
That's right. And tell him he doesn't know anything about roofing.
That's probably anything with respect to physical labor. It's a good bet. Gabe does not understand it.
Love you, Gabe.
That's right. We love you. We love your soft, uncalloused hands, Gabe. All right. Let's talk about getting hard, calloused hands here, Randy. Texas is going to play the Houston Cougars this Saturday. It's going to be obviously a bit of a jihad game for the Cougars, right? This is their opportunity to put an L on the name brand school under whose shadow they hide. And I don't know. What do you think? What's the percentage of Longhorn fans that will be in that crowd versus Houston?
Ooh, man.
Let me set you an over under.
Okay, yeah, that'll help. Go for
23.5% over or under.
Over. I was creeping up into the 40% range.
No.
I think it's going to be pretty crazy.
All right, well, I'll say this. I know for a fact Houston season ticket package is tied to that game, meaning you had to buy three other home games or something. You're saying there's Texas fans that bought it, or the Cougar fans are going to sell their tickets on StubHub?
Both of those.
Okay. All right. We're not going to have some don't stop believing Cougar fans that are going to hang on to these tickets.
I mean, it'd be great if it was a hostile environment, honestly, just for us moving forward, because I think it would be beneficial. But I don't think, I mean, I think it's going to be closer to probably 30, 35%.
All right. No, that'd be good. I like it.
Hopefully the bleachers will hold up this time.
I tell you what, that if you guys don't get that reference, it's a bleacher gate. You got to add gate to any scandal, Randy. It's
absolutely. Yeah, that's a new thing.
So the deal was Houston built temporary bleachers to house Longhorn visiting fans. The bleachers were condemned like 48 hours before kickoff by a structural engineer who said, hey, if you put a bunch of people on here, they're going to all die. It's going to look like a Brazilian soccer match. And then Houston reneged on their obligation, and a bunch of Texas fans who had paid were basically left without tickets and I think without compensation. Is that right? Or did they end up getting refunded?
I don't know that depth of the story.
All right. So in any event, it was very humiliating. And the Houston takeaway from that was Texas is arrogant.
Yeah.
They're contractually obligated to deliver something.
That's
they
the
didn't
best part
deliver
of the whole
it. And their takeaway was Texas is arrogant and cruel.
Yeah.
So I mean, that gives you some mindset.
Yeah, they tried to use their own engineers. They should have went up the road somewhere else and had somebody else design it.
Yeah. Yeah. What do we think about the Houston job?
I think it's going to be open.
Is it?
What's his buyout? It's like
I don't know.
$16 million. Something like that?
I don't know. Does it matter if Fertitta gets pissed off enough?
No, it doesn't.
But I mean, can you imagine?
You're within the realm of what the quote-unquote threshold is for buyouts, which
it
may change here shortly. We don't know yet, but it depends on how the rest of the year goes, honestly. I mean, he's not recruiting terribly. You're going to have a new outlook in the Big 12 next year once OU and Texas depart. It's a lot more wide open at that point. There's plenty of talent around there. I think it's an attractive job, and it's going to even get even more attractive if they can figure it out. I just don't know that Holgo's the guy. Your thoughts?
What's the ultimate upside of the commuter school? Louisville?
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good comparison.
And there's also some carryover in that Louisville has a basketball program, just kind of like Houston.
Houston as well. So the problem with Houston is, and people make this mistake quite frequently, in my opinion, they're like, oh, there's so many athletes in Houston, like blah, blah, blah. You mean you can take the third tier guy. Third tier guy's getting recruited too.
Yeah, they might be going to Ole Miss.
Like, yeah, especially now, like it's going to get even worse. So, I mean, you have to have a competitive and a good program there. Yes, if you want to stay home and play in Houston and, you know, be on Texas TV sets and all that good stuff. I mean, I see the sales pitch, but it's not like, oh, there's just a bunch of dudes hanging out like that nobody's talking to that Houston can go pick up off the scrap heap at the end of the day and still win games. Like everybody that Houston's interested in is getting a phone call from Mississippi State, Ole Miss,
Tulane,
Missouri, Texas Tech,
and
OU, Oklahoma State. Like, I mean, I think you're going to see a trend as well. And there's been a lot of talk about this recently with Texas going into Florida. I think you're going to see a trend with some of the bigger schools, especially with the NIL and the portal stuff, to where you take almost like 6 to 8-ish guys and treat them as, I hope you're good in 3 years. And if you pull the ripcord in year two, then you pull the ripcord in year two and be like, and whatever, you can go, you know, he ends up at, I don't know, in, you know, Stephen F or somewhere, you know, somewhere in smaller school in Florida. But I think with the Florida guys, especially just because that state isn't, they turn out way too much talent to not be as invested in football at the high school level that they should be, in my opinion. I just think that you're going to see the big guys have almost tiered levels of their roster where it's like, hey, we're going to take six of these dudes that, hey, if we catch lightning in a bottle on two to three of them, in 2 to 3 years, we're going to have a damn good football player, and we can afford to do that now, because if they don't work out, then we just go portal.
Yeah, so that's the alternative, is you take your six or eight developmental guys, and you know what? You monitor the six or eight developmental guys down the road at Texas State. And when one of them turns into an FC or a G5 All-American, you go, hey, man, we got some playing opportunity at cornerback. You want to do some auditioning for NFL scouts playing in the SEC? I think, look, Sark is going to continue to be mostly homegrown in terms of recruiting.
Yes.
Mm. But the portal is going to be increasingly important for filling five or six key niche roles every year.
Agreed.
And I hope we've got the proper infrastructure there and personnel to make those connections. So,
yeah, you would hope that his football army of assistants and whatever are properly trained and skilled to take advantage of that. Cause I think Texas is prime spot to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Hey, switching back to Houston a little bit. One thing that's interesting about their defense is how few quality offenses they've faced. And they're still surrendering 31.3 points per game. But here's the thing that's most concerning about them. On money downs, that's defined as third and fourth down, of course, they are giving up 51% conversion rates. And that's 47.1% on third down, 88.9% on fourth down. And this is against offenses that include UTSA, when they were starting a crippled Frank Harris, 0-6 Sam Houston, that's averaging 12.3 points per game. Those were their best money down performances. Rice was 9 of 15 against them. TCU was 8 of 18. Tech was 7 of 12. West Virginia was 14 of 20 and still lost the game. So I got to think, my takeaway on that is, if you want to shut up a road opponent on the rebound and you want to make a statement, the Longhorns need to be playing four down football.
Yes.
Hard. And anything past the 45-yard line, third and manageable, is two down territory.
I agree.
And if you can go up 21 zip on Houston and put them in pure passing YOLO mode, put all the burden on Donovan Smith, I think you're going to separate and probably blow them out.
I agree. And I honestly think that I think the game should be, I don't know if I'll use the term blowout, but it should be comfortable. But I don't see an issue with that. One thing I just ran across right here, and this goes contrary to what I was thinking about Houston's defense, so maybe it's contrary to what everybody else is thinking. Maybe not yours, since you're an author of a magazine. It's a wink.
Magazine, Randy?
A book, Paul. It's a book. It's a great book.
Freaking Houston, Melville, Faulkner, Hemingway, Wallington.
Houston is 13th in the Big 12 in sacks. I had them more as a YOLO defense of pressure and nothing, and that is not the case.
No, they're kind of everything. They sort of run everything on defense, and they're not really good at any one thing. And that's why they're bad on money downs, because they don't have a fallback.
They don't have a... Yeah. Since I'm glad you brought that up, I'll transition over to Texas on this. What is our offense?
Our offense?
Right now, speaking of one thing to... Because I think we get confused.
Of what our identity is, or...
Yes. It's and by we, I mean the people that call the plays.
It's multiple, Randy. That's our offense. It's versatile. We can win in different ways.
I agree with that.
Probably the most consistent thing we do is hand the ball off to Jonathan Brooks.
On plays that Jonathan Brooks and our offensive line are good at blocking.
Yeah. preferably.
Not fourth and one, meathead, goal line.
All right, so let's talk about that. What do you want to do if you've got four downs starting at the 1 yard line? Look, at some level, you want to be able to power in the ball.
100% agree. I get the concept and everything that we were going for. It's just contrary to what we're good at.
Yeah. Also, Quinn Ewers, I mean, obviously played phenomenally the last three quarters of the OU game, but not a quarterback sneak guy.
No, definitely not quarterback sneak guy. But if you'll remember last year, a lot of the narrative coming in as to why he overtook Hudson Card as a starter last year, he made great decisions in the red zone. All the practice red zone things, Ewers was really, really good. And now all of a sudden it's like, we don't trust him down there. I stay in the same offense and you spread him out. And like I said, I mean, I don't mind the jumbo package and this and that, but it's not who we are with the offensive line at this point in time. It's not Brooks's strength either. Hey, let me ask you this. One thing I just thought about: first down play. Have you seen it from the top angle?
The
first and goal from the one, from
the big hole that opens up
to the right.
Christian Jones. Yeah.
You think Bijan stops on a dime and jumps through that hole and walks in the end zone?
I'm sure. I think, yeah. Look,
as so one thing I was like, there's things where you talk about like how running backs make your offensive line
better.
Look better. I think that was a perfect example of when I saw that the first time, I was like, oh man, that dude just jumped that gap and completely left his gap wide open. And Bijan would have just went, whoop.
I'm almost certain I know what happened.
In the end zone.
I'm almost certain I know what happened there. So you're on the sideline. You're about to go in. Or not on the sideline. All of your instruction on goal.
Oh, go. Absolutely. No, I'm not faulting Brooks. I'm just saying that's outside of – it's the untrainable, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you can – dissect all that. What do you think about just going red cat?
I like it.
Okay.
My whole thing on him would have been, I don't know what the trust level is. And then they threw a fourth down tight end pass out of it. And I was like, well, okay, well, never mind. We obviously trust him. So, I like that concept. I think he fits the goal line mode probably better than our other backs.
You know, the thing that struck me is let's not allow substitution. So if you get in the red zone or if you get particularly into goal to go, don't bring on your goal line offense.
Yeah, stay in base offense. They're in base defense. You gotta get a yard.
They can't sub if you don't sub.
Correct.
And you can go hurry up. Doesn't mean you need to snap the ball instantly.
Right.
Sugar huddle, go up to the ball and look over to the sideline.
Yep.
And then start running your motions. I mean, Xavier Worthy should scare people near goal line because of his ability to separate quickly. Getting Jatavion Sanders back healthy should help. Although we've not used him a ton near the goal line.
No, I think that's something that we can probably figure out how to incorporate a little bit more because he should be a bigger weapon down there than what he has been.
One thing I do see suggested a lot that I actually hate. It's one of the lowest percentage routes in football.
Don't say the fade.
Fade.
No.
I don't want to see a back corner fade to A.D. Mitchell as like the cure-all.
I just
those don't work.
My whole thing on this has always been, if that's your answer in the goal line is that, hey, my guy's better than your guy, then you're not a good offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Like, scheme something up. You want to go man-on-man, that's great. But, scheme something up to have your guy with a two-way go or something. Like, no. Back shoulder, meh, okay. But I would need to see somebody prove that they're a legitimate weapon in that before I would. There's multiple other ways that this offense can be dangerous on the goal line before we start just chunking the ball to the corner of the end zone. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot we can do. It would be really interesting the degree to which we trust Savion Red to throw the ball and make, I mean, it's not even the throw, it's making decisions near the goal right. line. Mm. But if you come out with him wildcat, but you actually spread the field,
yeah,
four receivers.
And it's a true option of, hey, read this. If you want to throw this, you can throw it.
Yeah. And it's an 8-yard pass. It's not
right.
You know, requiring elite throwing ability. It's more decisional, right?
Right.
That would put a lot of stress on the defense because it's just a numbers game. You tell them to count the box, and if it's even or light, it's quarterback draw. If it's not, and if the team's like, oh, we're going to blitz him, you know, great. Hey, do you see Xavier Worthy over there? He's going to run a slant.
Yep.
Just throw it to him. Just throw it to that spot. So that would be interesting. Probably would scare too many coaches that it would be a interception in the end zone. But
true. Yeah.
I don't know.
The route there that I like out of that, we've used it once this year and Worthy dropped it, and we ran it a couple times last year, is that whip.
Yeah.
And he is extremely good at running it. He's good at running pretty much every route at selling the fake or whatever. But I think that opens up maybe a little more leeway to trust him because it's either – hey, he's got him beat. Just throw it 2 yards outside of him and he's good. Or he's covered. Just
yeah.
Don't. Whereas the slant, you got people undercutting the slant. You got a linebacker that can buzz over. Yeah, there's other things that come into play. Whereas the whip route, I think, makes it a little clearer there. And you can run that pretty easily off of the zone read fake as well.
Yeah, if you have a quarterback you don't trust at all and they horribly underthrow the whip, it's a pick six going the other way for 99 yards. But you got to hope your quarterback can throw to the outside shoulder of a receiver.
Right.
It's not super hard. But, hey, speaking of having someone beaten, Colorado, got to talk about that before we sign out.
I am absolutely at a loss. I have not watched the second half. I didn't have any interest in watching the second half. I went to sleep and I woke up and my wife said, hey, have you checked the scores yet? And I said, no. She goes, check the scores.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I don't know. I think I texted y'all. I was like, did somebody come kidnap everybody on the Colorado offense or what the hell happened?
So I watched the first half with my son, 29-0.
29, yeah.
And my son is like, yeah, if I go to University of Colorado, I'll meet Dion. And I was like, he won't be there, but he won't be coaching there, son, by the time you're there. Also, I'm not sure if I want you there playing hacky sack every day instead of going to school. But it's 29-0. I'm on Inside Texas posting, I didn't realize how slow Stanford was. I haven't watched them this year. And by the way, they still are slow. That's what makes this crazy.
Yeah, no, Stanford didn't morph into some like magical team.
Well, what they did is they discovered that one of their receivers
is really good.
Is good, and Colorado's secondary is bad. And this guy caught 13 balls for 294 yards and just destroyed them. And by the way, Stanford's comeback was not this fortuitous, all everything falls in their favor. They go and score 29-6, they missed the two-point conversion. They go and score again. They don't get the two-point conversion, 29-12. And then when they finally score again, it starts to, like, mount. And you can feel the psychology shift, and Colorado just starts to buckle. And Travis Hunter, who's fresh off that injury, played 150-something snaps. And they put him over on this receiver to, like, shut him down. Well, this guy weighs 210. Travis Hunter's 165, and he's worn down.
Oh, yeah.
So this guy just big brothers him, including the game-winning touchdown in overtime, which you haven't seen. You got to see it.
No, I saw that one. I don't understand the Travis Hunter thing on offense with him. Like, you use him situationally. Like, you have – that's the other thing that you have good on your team
is receivers.
Like, you don't need him to play 50 snaps on offense. Like, put him in at the on the plus side of the field, or if you have a special play for him. But there's no reason for that guy to be playing 40, 50 snaps or more on offense when you have the talent you have at receiver. It I don't know, weird. And then you have a tired guy, like you said, going up against a freak on defense, asking him to win the game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was totally wild. 46-43 is the final. If y'all haven't seen it, just pull up the highlights and watch the second half, and it's remarkable.
The touchdown catch alone is worth watching all the highlights to get that one in there. That's crazy.
So here's the craziest thing. It wasn't the wildest comeback in the state of Colorado on Saturday.
Are we talking Wyoming Air Force?
No.
Oh.
That was an amazing comeback, but that was a more traditional college football comeback. Colorado State.
Oh, I have no idea what happened this game.
They were down 3 touchdowns with 6 minutes left. And they were losing to Boise State. And they start hitting throws. They start getting kickoff, onside kick coverages. They hit a Hail Mary, just like the Houston game. I mean, and they end up winning this football game. Unfreaking believable. So, yeah, it was.
I didn't get that. Was the late game, right?
It was the late game.
Well, they went Hail Mary
to their huge tight end, who's going to play in the NFL. That's the weirdest thing about Colorado State is they've got 3 guys on their team who are clearly NFL players, but the rest of their team's so bad that they're basically a 500 Mountain West team. But their tight end, one of their receivers, Torrey Horton, and this edge rusher they've got, Kamara, are like clearly NFL players. But the rest of their team's not good. So, but when they can feature those guys, it's kind of like Colorado, like a lower, well, they're kind of comparable to Colorado.
Well, yeah. I mean, they played the wire with them. Yeah.
Yeah. But so they win 31-30 on a Hail Mary, being down 3 touchdowns.
When's the last time 2 Hail Marys hit on the same weekend?
Oh, it's happened. Yeah, it's happened. It's college football, man. But the fans had all left the stadium. So, like, literally 25 dudes rushed the field. So the announcers are like, that's a catch. Jalen Hooker, he got it. Colorado State wins. And the fans rushed the field.
And all 13 people.
And he's like, and the fans are going crazy. Some of them are rushing the field. It's awesome, man. So college football.
It's great.
It's madness. And
that's hilarious.
I tell you what.
Can we get the rushing the field stuff under control, by the way? Like,
what do you want? If you want it to happen or not to happen?
No, I don't want it to happen. If you're number 8, you beat number 7. Like,
kids get excited, Randy.
Whatever.
This is your Longhorn baseball brainwashing. If it's not the national title, none of you can smile.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Know what your goal is.
You won a game in Omaha. None of you celebrate. I don't want to see anyone smile. Randy, were you skipping right there?
Walk normally. If you're the team that loses, like, somebody's going to get freaking throat punched and die at some point in time because they're going to run up to some dude that's 6'4", 280 and be like, yeah, you suck.
That's happened.
Punk.
Yeah. Do you remember the Boise State guy taunting LeGarrette Blunt?
I got smoked with a helmet.
He didn't get hit with a helmet. He just hit him. He just
punched. I thought he hit him with his helmet.
No, he just dropped him. And then he tried to jump in the stands and attack the fans. Yeah. That was awesome. LeGarrette.
That's awesome. The 15 person. I'm fine with the 15 person storming the field. That's safe.
The 15 person storming the field was acceptable.
They were all probably high too. They didn't know where they were. So
well, and when you see it, you assume that they're just student trainers that were on the sideline. But then you realize, those are the fans.
Yeah, at that point, it's like, who's that guy?
But there's only 20 of them.
That's Mike. I got biology with him.
He was too drunk to leave. He couldn't walk out.
It's like, damn, my car's on the other side of the stadium, but if I just go across it, it's closer.
You're right. Air Force and Wyoming had an amazing game. High scoring for them, 34-27. Air Force had rallied and won the game late. But yeah, I mean, I bet the under on that game. And it beat the under by early third quarter.
Well within.
But yeah, Air Force undefeated, now ranked. So what's going to happen if they go undefeated and everyone's got a loss? Are there going to be people writing Air Force should go to the playoff columns?
They're number 4, as they should be.
No.
No, they're
okay,
not. They're
come
going to go
on.
To the Armed Forces Bowl
and pummel Baylor
in Fort Worth, and yeah,
pummel TCU or something.
Yeah, no, they yeah, good for
pummel
them.
Texas A&M.
Good for them, but no.
All right, so
going
Aggies.
To a
bowl? Well, yeah, they're going to go to a bowl. They're 4-3.
I had to bait you a little bit there.
They're 4-3. They still got a couple of football games on their schedule. They still got some easy games on their schedule, but no easy days for the Aggies. PFF, who I have mixed feelings about, but they do interesting work. It's something to sort of add to your data points. They rated the A&M offensive line performance the worst to date in college football.
I watched most of that game. It was my wife was not very happy. She's like, I'm done.
Speaking of a quarterback you don't trust, Joe Milton.
Ooh, man.
Man.
I don't like that game was just a contest of like weird decisions on basically based around the fact of well, what's the safest thing we can do here?
Yeah. How can we not give up a pick six?
Pretty much on both sides.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very, 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 very ultra conservative. And I don't know. I don't watch a whole lot of Tennessee football, but I do see a fair amount of A&M, and it's like the same story unfolding every weekend for the last 4 years.
What I know is this. I was flipping channels because I was watching, I think, Oregon and Washington. I think it was
yeah,
at the
it was
same
the same time zone, yeah.
Every time I flipped a channel, A&M was on offense, and it was a replay of Max Johnson being hit incredibly hard.
Yeah.
So no, I don't know what
– yeah.
All I'll say is that guy is tough as boot leather. Like,
I was going to say, there's a lot of talk about like people faulting him for his play. I was like, that dude got knocked into oblivion every single time he snapped or he dropped back.
I think he suffered four different concussions.
Yeah. No, he got murdered.
Yeah. So when you're getting hit that hard, and there's a difference between contact, pressure, a guy's in your face as you're releasing the ball, you're getting a little
yep.
shove in your chest as you release it and you land on your butt, you know, whatever. There's a difference between that and three dudes hitting you simultaneously who weigh between 240 and 320. Yep. Like,
yeah,
he was getting rocked and he hung in there. I mean,
no, he's tough. Yeah. You give him that.
But yeah, I got to give credit.
The fact that they
go ahead.
I was just going to say the fact that they allow Anaya Smith to get schemed out of the game is just borderline psychotic.
When you play,
I didn't even try to throw him the ball until the pick at the end. Like, it'd be like not throwing the ball to Worthy.
When you play like ass, the other team stops anus.
Guess so.
Hey, I don't know if you saw the Jimbo Fisher post game presser, because one of my favorite things about Jimbo post game pressers is the immaculate game that he called and how the kids undermined him the entire game.
I did not watch it, but yeah, I'm familiar with the concept of, if we'd have executed anything that we set out to execute, we'd have won, but they didn't.
So. It's all about execution. We call Y post. He doesn't run Y post. It's supposed to go 12 yards. He goes 15 yards. Quarterback throws a good ball, 12 yards, goes interception right there. What are you going to do about that? That's execution. That's every Jimbo Fisher press conference. Well, he didn't get into that this time because an A&M reporter asked him, Jimbo, with all of the investment that people have put in this program, specifically NIL, specifically contributing to the 12th man, contributing like all the different stuff. The guy just calls it out. Is this a reasonable return on investment for A&M boosters? And usually you get a very compliant A&M press corps that just throws up softballs and, coach, talk about how this is a gut-wrenching loss and how you guys played so hard, right? That kind of bullshit. This guy just challenged him. Hey, dude, we got a lot of money invested in you. We got a lot of money invested in NIL. We're 4-3. And he responds, no one's more upset than our kids. So I appreciate our fans, but I don't put them above our kids. Our kids are more upset. That was his response. you think you're upset with the investment, but our kids are upset. And by the way, they all become kids when they lose.
They're young. Absolutely.
They're young men every other day, but they're children when they lose a game, so that we can do that, play the Sally Struthers music. But
that's a
novel response. So imagine, Randy, if I added a few zeros to your net worth and you'd given, I don't know, $10 million to A&M over the past couple of years, dropping bags, paying for Jimbo, paying for facilities. And a reporter asked that question, and that's Jimbo's response. How do you feel at that moment?
And it's not the answer I was looking for, I'll tell you that.
Probably not the answer you're looking for. I mean, there is probably no good answer there other than...
No, I don't know what you're supposed to say.
Hey, look, we still got our season in front of us.
Probably not that. Hey, we're 4-3. 4-3, we could end up being 9-3.
You got to do coach speak.
Yeah, you got to do something there.
Our goal is to get better, get healthy. We've got to buy. We're going to finish this thing out 5-0. That's the goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you just... And people might roll their eyes or whatever, but... At least you're not doing the, they don't hurt more than these kids hurt. They're hurting more. I don't want to hear all that. And it's like, ooh, all right. That's not going to play real well.
No, not. You got to know your audience at some point. And the money over there is not real thrilled at this point in time.
Well, and so that's the interesting thing is, does that money show their dissatisfaction? Because A&M's got a recruiting class that's very good. I think they're ranked 4th in the country right now. They've been ranked really high the last few years under Jimbo. Are they going to keep those guys?
Yeah.
And how? And there's a combination there. Are those guys still going to get their bags? And or what if A&M's looking at 5-4 with 3 games left? Is A&M the new hotness, or are they going to open up their recruitments and start looking at Georgia, Texas, et cetera?
It's something to monitor, especially for the guys that we're in with them. I don't know. You have to see what the trajectory is for the rest of the season. But I don't see a scenario to where if they continue to fall that some form of what you just mentioned doesn't happen. Same thing with Florida, which I know they got somehow won a game on Saturday. I'm not still trying to figure that one out. But anybody that we're in the market for players with, definitely worth keeping an eye on to kind of see how things shake out from 100%. This point forward.
All right, so Texas travels to Houston after that. They host BYU. BYU got S hammered by TCU in Fort Worth. They did not look good. So I was using that game as a litmus test of, hey, is BYU okay? Like, are they average at least? No, they are not. Is Texas going to win the next two? And then Kansas State's interesting coming into Austin the next week.
That should be it.
All right. You got a score feeling for Houston?
I don't know, I'm gun shy after the Oklahoma deal, but we also threw a pick on the second play of the game. So I still don't really back off anything I said at the OU game. I don't think they're everything I said. I mean, I think Gabriel was what I underestimated, his comfort in the offense and knowing where to go with the football. And then obviously the run, I didn't see that coming. Houston, upper 40s to teens.
Yeah.
47.
Feels that way.
47-13, something like that.
Whoa. All right. Like it. Yeah, the line is in low 20s right now.
Yeah, it was like 21.
Yeah, I think it's gone up.
Everybody's freaking 22. Out. Everybody was freaking out about it. I was like, I wouldn't bet it probably, but it's probably right.
I think people need to look at Houston's body of work.
Yeah, it's...
There's a reason they went to overtime with Rice, guys.
And forget about the fact that people thought West Virginia was better than what it's still the same West Virginia where their coach is probably getting fired 3 weeks into the season. So,
yeah, sometimes we have as fans trouble distinguishing scrappy from good.
Yes,
and West Virginia is plenty scrappy. They're not good. So, especially away from Morgantown. But
yeah,
yeah,
that's kind of their secret trump card.
I feel similarly. So to me, it's one game at a time, and then you want to play in the Big 12 title again.
That's right.
And probably a rematch with OU. That's not guaranteed either. Wilder things have happened, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be the Sooners.
It would be surprising if it's not them, but I also see a path to where they sustain an injury or two and have issues.
Could Texas drop another Big 12 game and still play in the Big 12 title?
I don't want them to, but probably.
Yeah. It's pretty,
probably,
I would say likely.
Probably more likely than not, honestly.
Maybe. I was trying to put a percentage on it.
Depending on who that team is, I guess, would be the question, right?
Yeah, I think actually the issue is your fear is that a non-head-to-head opponent
right
would actually, like Oklahoma State, would pull
yes.
off some kind of upset on OU mm-hmm. and whatever. But yeah, look, as I've said, since the 3 minutes after we lost to OU went out,
yep,
it's all good. And, you know, frankly, I didn't have Texas going undefeated in Big 12 play. I predicted they'd go 8-1. So we'll see. We'll see if they go true to form. Any parting thoughts before we say adios to the good people?
I don't think so. I just, you know, hopefully everybody had a good bye week on the health front, and we get a couple guys back closer to full strength and that type of stuff. But I just, the biggest thing I look for with Houston is just, do we hop back on the horse and get after it, or are we still licking our wounds?
Yeah, I got to think that Sark's got an opportunity to motivate some folks, and I think there might be some coaches kicking themselves about their game plan, and they'll have an opportunity to reinstill a little aggression on defense and also in our offensive game management. And when your offense is rolling, don't stop rolling. And with that, everyone gets a trophy podcast. We'll continue to roll on. We took our own bye week hiatus. Now we're refreshed and we're ready to give you solid B-minus content for the rest of the season. All right. With that, for Randy Boone, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em.
Hook 'em.